Okay, sorry for inconveniences. We had some technical issues. All right, so it's my pleasure to start this microconference. Hi, I'm Petr Bělohlávek. Most of you probably have seen me already here. I'm a PhD student of Milan Straka, who's unfortunately on holiday today, so he's not here. I will be talking about some cool stuff about neural networks and some approaches we are trying to make in our research. Well, together with Milan, we're trying to get some understanding of neural networks to understand what they do, actually, which is, well, frankly, we don't know. Like, it's just a bunch of computation. So I will present a few approaches and a few like ideas for research that we're trying to develop. Okay, but before we start, just a basic of deep learning. I guess that you all know something about deep learning, neural networks, a lot of layers, etc. Is there anyone who doesn't know anything? Like, cool, good. So, well, deep learning is a buzzword, and you know, like, it's everywhere right now, and it has a lot of problems, and that's what I'm going to talk about. So, we all know the trivial problems, such as we need a lot of data, which is hard to get and very expensive to mine. And we know that we need a lot of computational resources and everything takes too long. But there's one other issue, and it's interpretability. Nobody knows what's going on in deep learning models. Like, maybe Professor Ng and Hinton have a clue, but I don't. So the interpretability is a problem. And why is it a problem? Well, a lot of people can say that it's not a problem. We don't need to interpret the models, but we do. Because if you want to bring AI or deep learning into business, into regular real-world applications, we need that. Well, these are three examples of fields in which we can use artificial intelligence right away, but we can't because we can't interpret it. In medicine, you can't even assess the patient without some, you know, like, certificates and audits of the algorithms. In banking and in insurance, you can't apply the models because the top managers won't let you because they don't know what's going on. So the interpretability of the models is crucial for day-to-day use of deep learning. Okay, well, the first part, which I'm going to talk about, is assessing the network uncertainty. And, well, we probably want to let the model assess his uncertainty itself. Because when we have a classification model, for example, classifying some inputs, for example, images, into cats and dogs, for example, or, well, whatever, it's really hard to say how much the network knows the answer. It has to choose something, for example, a dog, or some tag, or topic, or whatever. But we don't know how much sure it is. Well, even a small children can tell you that something, well, it's not sure of its answer, but the network can't. Well, there's one option and one approach of getting this certainty level, and it's the ratio of logits. If you have logits and you do the softmax, which is like the final layer in which you do what you do in order to get the probability of the classes, you can do the simple ratio. But this has a lot of problems, and it's not really not the uncertainty level. For example, the longer you train a network, the more extreme or sharp the distribution gets. So after many, many iterations or epochs, maybe after the model is overfitted or also even not there, the distribution gets like this. So there's a peak around the class. So this is a problem because the network will be almost always like 99% sure of its answer. And well, that's a problem because we can't express the uncertainty. Well, so what if we train it? What if we train the network to assess its own uncertainty? That would be great, right? And the question is, can we do that? We don't know, right? But yeah, we're trying to do so. And it seems like in theory, it's possible. So we can simply add a new loss, which is also trainable or optimized together with the original loss, which could be like cross entropy or, you know, like the traditional losses. And we can simply let the network guess whether it's right or wrong. So there are two branches of the network. The first will classify or predict a next token or whatever. It will do the thing we want it to. And the second branch will assess the correctness. And if you do the math, it's differentiable, so we can train it end to end in modern frameworks like TensorFlow or Theano or whatever. So the final question, can we use it somehow? Does it work? Well, we have some experiments with really basic tasks like OCR, I mean, reading digits from images, or reading various characters, or even whole words, from image. And it seems like it really corresponds with the level of uncertainty. For example, if you blur the images, you get a lower amount of certainty. And the final question is, can we use it in NLP? And that's what we're trying to do with Milan. And this is getting pretty complicated. And right now, well, it doesn't work well. We can't see any correspondence with blurness of inputs, etc. But it's still a lot of things to do, which we would like to do in next month. All right. Next part I'm going to talk about is mix-up. This is basically more like related work rather than my own research. But mixup is a cool regularization technique. You probably all know regularization, right? So I'll skip that. The mixup, as the name suggests, is about mixing two inputs. So if you have two examples, for example, pictures, you can average them, like pixel-wise. Or you can make any convex combinations. And if you do the same convex combinations on the labels, for example, I take 99% of one image and 1% of the other, and I'll add up together, I can do the same thing with labels. So it's 99% cat and 1% dog. And it doesn't make sense, right? But we can optimize it because, well, it's categorical cross-entropy, and, well, we can do whatever we want. So we can easily blend two inputs together. Only some inputs, of course, because only the structured one. Pixels are okay, table data are okay, NLP is not okay, right? So this is the visualization from the paper. We can see one class of, this is one class, for example, cats, and the orange ones are dogs. And as you can see, we have some combinations of these two points, and this is the shades of blue. The more blue it is, the darker, the more weight is put on the orange class, and etc. It's just a visualization, no big deal. Well, so the final question is, can we adapt this approach to NLP? And it would be great, because we know that this helps a lot, and it improves everything around images and structured data and everything. So if we could somehow apply mix-up to NLP, we know we probably get great results. For example, in machine translation, that's great. But it's not that easy, because these sequences are of variable length, right? We can't simply average two sentences. It doesn't make sense, because everything is discrete, and even though if we could average some words or characters, which we can't, it's hard to do it in variable length sequences of them. So this is a pickle. And one approach we were talking with Milan is combining some hidden states of the network. Instead of blending together the raw inputs, we could encode them by some neural network, some recurrent probably, and then combine the final states and train the network with blended states. Well, the theory is that we can like make the state space smoother and everything would be great, but can it really help? And this is really technical, and it's not that easy to implement, but so far we can say it helps. Well, it's like still the same, but it doesn't help yet. But we would like to continue in this research, definitely. So. Third part I'm going to talk about is the derivations. We call it derem, but it's just a fun word. and together with Deněk and Jonáš and Lukáš and some other guys, Vojta here, we tried to use some derivation network, in our case, Derinet, so that it helps training of neural networks. And the theory is that if we have such a huge compilation of words and their mutual linkage and some relations, the neural network can learn it somehow. It can benefit from it. For example, instead of reading a huge number of data, a huge number of sentences in order to create word embeddings, we can somehow use their derivations of words and get this information to the network. And that's it, yeah. So how to do that? Well, the initial approach was to plug in the Derinet into the neural network, which means force similar words in Derinet, which means, like, I don't know. Well, in English, it's pretty hard to think of something. Well, whatever. So if you take, like, a noun and an adjective, which are similar, we can force them to be close together in embedding space. So the network can put them together. And the initial theory was that similar words should be together. Okay? And this could be some additional information. And we tried that, and it didn't make a huge difference. But we're trying to somehow, like, see the derivations from the embeddings. And, well, many people have different opinions whether we see something or not, but we probably think that there is some information in it. But, well, it's hard to prove. All right. Well, finally, I would like to talk about adversarial examples. I'm not sure if everybody knows what adversarial example is, and I guess probably not. So I will just briefly introduce. Well, adversarial example is an example which is very similar to the original training data, like very similar. And the network can't process it. It makes error. This is the example that, like, bamboozled the network. So this was a part of my master thesis, or this was my master thesis. And it resulted in a paper, which I presented at LREC 2 weeks ago. And this is a great example by Professor Goodfellow of an adversarial example. And on the left side, you see a panda, right? Everybody knows it's a panda. And, well, good trained, ResNet, you know, like deep neural network, can about 60% confidence say that it's a panda. And if we add some noise, which is not actually random, but carefully picked, if we add some noise, but very little, just a very little of it, and add it, we get the final image on the right. And you probably wonder, what's the difference between these two images? And that's the in the middle. That's the image in the middle. But the human eye can't distinguish between these images. But the neural network can, because it's just some floats or integers, you know, and it differs just a bit, and it's enough to confuse the network. So we know that the networks are really fragile, and they can be fooled by a little undetectable noise. So the question is, can we fool the networks? And we know yes, that was the example. And the question which, like, I'm interested in is, can we interpret these changes? And in the field of images, it's easy. We saw the noise. We can really visualize it easily. And in tabular data, like in, you know, like everything you can store in SQL database, is the same. But what's really hard is NLP. And my thesis was about generating these adversarial examples and fooling the networks. And that's what the paper was about. But now I'm more interested in what does it mean, or what it means. And it's really hard to get, because, you know, if you change the input just a little, well, it's hard, because the language is discrete, right? So you can't, there's nothing just a little. So you have to do the step to change the word. So we focused on changing the embeddings, which are continuous, so we can do everything with them. But the problem is that if we change the embedding and try to interpret the changed embedding, we have a problem. Well, it means nothing, right? We haven't seen such embedding yet. So we can look for the nearest neighbor, and it's usually, because we want a small change, the original word. So it's really hard to interpret these examples. But yeah, that's what we'd like to focus now. No? It's broken, by the way. OK, so just a brief conclusion. Well, neural networks are really black boxes. Well, we really don't know what's happening in there. And it's a problem, because for day-to-day life, we can't use them. And right now, like this year, or maybe the second half of the last year, the interpretability papers are really appearing. There are a lot of them, and I hope we will like make some new. Okay, so that's for me. I hope the time is like okay. Yeah.
Any questions from the audience? If not, let me start with one. Well, I was quite surprised by the claim that the distribution of the distributions is so peaky in neural networks. Yeah. I had many years ago when I did some translation experiments using the maximum entropy models, I got the distributions like...
I mean this one.
Yeah. Well, it was not, most of the cases were not the order of magnitude differences. Mm. So maybe that the best translation equivalence was like 60%, 30%, 10%, yeah. What I expected. So this surprises me. And are you sure that even if you amplify the differences that you cannot get anything reasonable? Because you didn't say that it's 100%.
No, it's not like 100%, it's like 95%.
Okay, so would it make sense to find some increasing monotonous transformation that would amplify the differences?
So use something different than softmax.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't thought about it.
Or some transformation is applied on the output of softmax.
Yeah. Maybe.
Well, of course, the question is what is the target? How it could be measured?
Yeah. Like in this case, we talk usually about classification tasks. So. These are like classes 1, 2, 3, 2, 9. But for example, in the context of machine translation, I really don't know. I don't know, sorry. but in principle, yeah, like in theory, we can't use any, let's say monotonous transformation we want, but I can't think of any more suitable than softmax.
Well, I mean, if right you now. Make a square root of that or something like that,
And
of course you would have to normalize it after
but
you can amplify the smaller ones and decrease the bigger ones. This is related to my second question. You say that this is basically for classification purposes.
Yeah.
So can't you use maybe some parallel annotated data?
Parallel?
If you have any human annotation, so some people make some decisions. Mm-hmm. And many times they do not agree with each other. Mm-hmm. So maybe that you could measure this disagreement and try to use this as the target distribution.
That's definitely an approach, but these data sets are pretty rare. Well,
that's true. Yeah.
So this is more like approach to generate more data or to avoid this. But of course, if we have annotations and we can pay them like we can generate this kind of data, and it would help, of course. But the data sets are not available.
Well, I wouldn't say of course, I'd be interested.
No, well, not of course, but I think that, of course.
Okay. Okay. Right. Any other questions? Thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.